Blog Talk Radio.
Matthew 24. Jesus left the temple and was walking away when his disciples came up to him to call his attention to its buildings. "Do you see all these things?" he asked. "I tell you the truth. Not one stone here will be left on another. Every one will be thrown down." As Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately. "Tell us," they said, "when will this happen? And what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age?" Jesus answered, "Watch out that no one deceives you. For many will come in my name, claiming, 'I am the Christ,' and will deceive many. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars, but see to it that you are not alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All these are the beginning of birth pains. Then you will be handed over to be persecuted and put to death, and you will be hated by all nations because of me. At that time, many will turn away from the faith and will betray and hate each other, and many false prophets will appear and deceive many people. Because of the increase of wickedness, love most will grow cold, but he who stands firm to the end will be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. So when you see standing in the holy place the abomination that causes desolation spoken of through the prophet Daniel, let the reader understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let no one on the roof of his house go down to take anything out of the house. Let no one in the field go back to get his cloak. How dreadful it will be in those days for pregnant women and nursing mothers. Pray that your flight will not take place in winter or on the Sabbath, for then there will be great distress, unequaled from the beginning of the world until now and never to be equaled again. If those days had not been cut short, no one would survive. But for the sake of the elect, those days will be shortened. At that time, if anyone says to you, 'Look, here is the Christ,' or 'There he is,' do not believe it. For false Christs and false prophets will appear and perform great signs and miracles to deceive even the elect, if that were possible. See, I have told you ahead of time. So if anyone tells you, 'There he is out in the desert,' do not go out. Or, 'Here he is in the inner rooms,' do not believe it. For as lightning that comes from the east is visible even in the west, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. Wherever there is a carcass, there the vultures will gather. Immediately after the distress of those days, the sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from the sky, and the heavenly bodies will be shaken. At that time, the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky, and all the nations of the earth will mourn. They will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky with power and great glory. And he will send his angels with a loud trumpet call, and they will gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of the heavens to the other. Now learn this lesson from the fig tree. As soon as its twigs get tender and its leaves come out, you know that summer is near. Even so, when you see all these things, you know that it is near, right at the door. I tell you the truth. This generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away. No one knows about that day or hour, not even the angels in heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. As it was in the days of Noah, so it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. For in the days before the flood, people were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, up to the day Noah entered the ark. And they knew nothing about what would happen until the flood came and took them all away. That is how it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. Two men will be in the field. One will be taken and the other left. Two women will be grinding with a handmill. One will be taken and the other left. Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know on what day your Lord will come. But understand this. If the owner of the house had known at what time of night the thief was coming, he would have kept watch and would not have let his house be broken into. So you also must be ready, because the Son of Man will come at an hour when you do not expect him. Who then is the faithful and wise servant whom the master has put in charge of the servants in his household to give them their
May 20th, proper time? 2011.
It will be good for that servant whose master finds him.
Washington,
so
D.C., the planet Earth.
I tell you the truth, he will put him
third
in charge
planet
of all
from the sun. I'm your host, Dr. C.
But
Robert Jones.
The servant is wicked and says to himself, my master is staying away a
the
long time.
The call-in number is
347-884-8500.
A toll-free number is 877-666-9305. All right. Wow. What a series of events today. Benjamin Netanyahu spoke, brutally rebuffed Barack Obama's plan. Or was it his suggestion? Was he simply suggesting a peace initiative for Israel and the Palestinians? Did Barack Obama believe that he could do what no other president has done before him? That he could bring the two sides together simply by, well, offering the idea of swapping land for peace? Haven't we been down this road before with the Palestinians, with the Arabs and the Jews? Land for peace, food for peace, 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 and more peace. As long as we have men on this earth, there will be no peace. Well, let me go ahead and amend that statement. There'll be no real lasting peace. Men are always going to fight amongst themselves. They're always going to want, there's always going to be somebody who wants something you have. I don't care if it's your money, your watch, your wife, your girlfriend. There's always going to be somebody who wants something you have. It's human nature. And all this talk about peace, especially peace in the Middle East, well, it's kind of like, in my opinion, racism here in the United States. And work with me here. You can change the laws so that you can't discriminate against a person riding on a bus, or you can't discriminate on which patrons you'll allow into your restaurants or your hotels. You shouldn't discriminate against those things. And there are laws that can be passed to ensure that the laws are upheld. However, you can't change what's in a man's heart. You can't legislate what's in a man's heart. If he wants to hate you, that's the way he was raised. That's his mindset. He's going to hate you. And there's no law that can fix that. Now, apply that to what's happening in the Middle East right now. If Barack Obama believes, sincerely believes, that a major step forward in mending the rift between Jews and Arabs is simply to, well, start by swapping land, and everything's going to be just fine. Well, then Barack Obama doesn't understand how he doesn't understand the history between Arabs and Jews. He simply doesn't. He's supposed to be this brilliant, this genius. He's above normal human beings. He's godlike. Godlike. Antoinette, good to see you. Karen, good to see you. American citizens in the room as well. Listen to this clip for a moment.
Well, we were the good guys in 1984. It felt that way. It hasn't felt that way in recent years. So Obama's had really a different task. We've seen too often as the bad guys. And he has a very different job from Reagan was all about America. And you talked about it. Obama is, we are above that now. We're not just parochial. We're not just chauvinistic. We're not just provincial. We stand for something. I mean, in a way, Obama's standing above the country, above the world. He's sort of God. He's going to bring all different sides together.
So maybe Obama got wind of this whole God thing, and he's pretty much taken it to heart, because Obama's above politics, right? He's above this whole thing, whatever that is. He's godlike. This was an MSNBC interview with an MSNBC political pundit. It states that God is Barack Obama. But for the first time in history, an American president has chosen to abandon one of our greatest allies, Israel, in favor of radical Muslims led by the terrorist group Hamas. Mark this day on your calendar. Mark yesterday on your calendar. Mark today too, because Netanyahu took things into control and put things into context. This is the day. Today is the day that Obama lost the 2012 election. And I'll tell you why. Obama has, in his arrogance, in his total arrogance, Obama has awakened a sleeping giant. American Jews and Christians united in their love and support for Israel are outraged today. Moreover, they are shocked and sickened. Obama clearly showed his radical and hateful colors. The American people won't forget it. They're not going to forget it. I have here in front of me an article from Newsmax. And it says, just days ago, because of the weak GOP field, Wayne Allen Root wrote that Obama was the favorite for re-election. And that now, Thursday, all that changed. And I couldn't agree more. On Thursday, Obama left no doubt that he sides with and wants to redistribute money from American taxpayers to Palestinians and radical Muslims like Hamas that target Israeli women and children, that encourage their own children to become suicide bombers, and that hand out candy in celebration for the murder of an innocent Jewish baby, that force women to endure public lashings for disobeying a husband, that execute women for allowing themselves to be gang raped, that pour acid on the face of little girls who dare to want an education, who throw gay men off the roofs of buildings, who marry off their 5-year-old daughters to pay the bills, who imprison all women for life behind dark veils in 120-degree heat to keep them from being seen by other men. This is what Obama is siding with on Thursday. And Karen Hunter in the chat room writes, excuse me, and I will make of thee, Israel, a great nation, and I will bless thee, and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing, and I will bless them that bless thee, and curse them that curse thee, and in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed. Amen to that. But see, here's the problem. Obama wants to distribute our taxpayer money to radicals who attack churches and murder Christians. He wants more foreign aid for Egypt, a country headed for domination by the Muslim Brotherhood, an ally of Nazis in World War II. That is who Obama has chosen to side with over a modern, capitalist, America-loving Israel, with democracy, freedom, and equality for men, women, gays, and Arabs. And Obama has taken the opportunity to side with those other folks. Not perfection, because we all know that neither America nor Israel is perfect. But like in America, all people, including Muslims, enjoy far more freedom in Israel than in any Muslim country. If you're a thinking, fair-minded person, Christian or Jew, that support Israel's right to exist, you must be sickened and outraged by Obama's demand for Israel to return to its 1967 borders. Because that demand displaces over 300,000 Israeli citizens. Has Obama shown his true colors? Well, think about this for a moment. President Obama spent 20 years in a church that taught liberation theology. And let me give you an example of what liberation theology is all about. Take a listen to this this clip I'm about to play.
Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney has been inundated with coverage about his Mormon faith, LDS. In light of this, last night we reported on the controversial teachings of Democratic candidate Barack Obama's Chicago-based church. A guest on our program likened Trinity Unity Church of Christ to a separatist movement, drawing comparisons to Branch Davidians. Joining us now for a response to these claims, Trinity United, is the Reverend Dr. Jeremiah Wright. Reverend, welcome to the program. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, this is the same church. You do have the website, right, where it says commitment to the black community, commitment
the black
to the black
value,
go ahead.
The black value system, which was developed by congregation, by laypersons of the congregation 26 years ago,
right.
Very similar to the gospel and solidarity by laypersons in Nicaragua during the whole liberation theology movement 26, 28, 30
right, but
years
let me,
ago.
Yeah. But we're not dealing with, this is on the website today. Well, let me just inform our audience, and I want you to respond if you can. It says commitment to God. By the way, I'm with you, and I hope you'll pray for me, Reverend. Commitment to the black community, commitment to the black family, adherence to the black work ethic. It goes on, pledge, you know, acquired skills available to the black community, strengthening and supporting black institutions, pledging allegiance to all black who have embraced the black value system, personal commitment to the embracement of the black value system. Now, Reverend, if every time we said black and those words were white, wouldn't we call that church racist?
No, we would call it Christianity. Since there was a white Christianity, we've been saying that ever since white Christians took part in the slave trade. We've been saying that ever since they had churches and slave castles. We don't have to say the word white. We just have to live in white America, United States of white America. That's not the issue. You're missing the issue. As I was trying to say to you, liberation theology, and I thought Eric Rush had studied at a theological seminary that was conservative. Come to find out, he doesn't know anything more about theology than I know about brain surgery. So
here's my point.
No, let me finish. No, here's my point to you. If you're not going to talk about theology in context, if you're not going to talk about liberation theology that came out of the 60s, systematized.
Okay, so this is the church that Barack Obama attended for 20 years. The church where Pastor Jeremiah Wright, whom you just heard pronounced not God bless America, but God damn America. Barack Obama comes from a church where Jews are the enemy. When Jeremiah Wright was asked by a CNN reporter whether or not he had spoken to Barack Obama recently, Jeremiah Wright responded that them Jews will not allow Barack Obama to be spoken to again by Jeremiah Wright. Them Jews. Now, I guess you just say them Jews and it's okay. I mean, does saying them Jews won't let me talk to Barack Obama, is that anti-Semitic? Well, I don't know. But this is a church that Barack Obama attended for 20 years. This pastor, the voice that you heard, Pastor Jeremiah Wright, married Barack Obama, baptized his children. So, what's going on here? Could there be a lot more to this than what we're seeing here? Barack Obama has thrown our friends under the bus for our enemies. What point is he trying to make here? What point is Barack Obama attempting to make by throwing all our friends under the bus? Now, I'm not just talking about Israel right now. Everybody. Everybody. Now, if you're... I don't know. What right does America have to make 300,000 people of another country homeless? What does America have to meddle in Israeli affairs? What right does America have to demand an ally give up its own territory, won in a defensive war? Should America take Texas back to Mexico? Well, I think Barack Obama would say yes. Should we have hand Boston back to the British? What right does Obama have to give away the land Israel needs to provide natural defenses from Hamas missiles and terrorist attacks? What if America's meddling leads to the destruction of Israel and the death of millions of innocent Israelis? With things like this, Israel no longer needs enemies. Now, if you're a libertarian, non-interventionalist, well, you should be outraged that an American president is choosing sides at all. You should be outraged that Obama is inflaming tensions that could lead to World War III, as we talked about yesterday. You should be outraged that instead of cutting off foreign aid to radical countries, or eliminating all foreign aid, Obama, on this same day today, recommended several billion dollars in new foreign aid to countries filled with radical hate for America, as well as Jews and Christians worldwide. Where are we getting the money from? Where's the money coming from? We really can't afford it. So where's all this money coming from? I suppose the American taxpayer. It's true redistribution of wealth. And I'll go ahead and submit this. If you have common sense, you should be outraged at the very idea of throwing away more money. America is broke. We have got to cut back dramatically on foreign aid or simply eliminate it. Why would we commit billions to countries ruled by despots and radicals that hate America and support the destruction of Israel? Billions from where? We now borrow almost 50% of what we spend. And Obama wants to give away more money that we have to borrow from China, or have the Fed print more fake money to give away to people that hate us. What sense does this make? It's clear now that Obama no longer speaks for the American people. And I suspect that Jewish voters will never again feel the same about Obama. And while Jews make up only 2% of America's population, they provide a majority of the donations to Democrat politicians. Obama has lost in one sentence many crucial Democrat donors. But Obama's biggest mistake was awakening a sleeping giant. It is Christian voters who elect presidents, and almost 100 million evangelical Christians who love Israel will now vote and donate to Obama's opponents. With the fervor and passion of a patriotic group on a mission to save America and Israel from destruction. And sadly enough, they'll be right. The call-in number is 347-884-8500. Going to take a short break, and I'll be right back.
We're going to spread happiness. We're going to spread freedom. Obama's going to change it. Obama.
That's enough. My God, I can't stand it. I have done many, many a radio show on Blog Talk Radio. And quite a few of those shows speak to the question, is Barack Obama the Antichrist? Is Barack Obama on a mission to destroy the United States of America? Is Barack Obama on a mission to destroy the world? Is he a puppet? Is he a puppet of some shadowy figures out to control the world? Well, I simply ask the question because there's a lot of speculation out there about that topic, and it seems to be a favorite of a lot of people. But here's the thing. I started to actually honestly believe. Not that Barack Obama is the Antichrist, but that Barack Obama has the destruction of the United States of America in mind, and indeed the world. Think about this for a minute. Barack Obama, he's supposed to be this really smart guy, brilliant. He has to know that the only thing standing between Israel and the rest of the world that hates Israel, i.e. The Arab nations that surround Israel, is the United States of America. And the fact that Israel is armed to the teeth in a variety of nuclear weapons, tactical and otherwise. I have a caller on the line. Hey, caller, you're on the line with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Radio Report.
Yeah, this is American Citizen. I just wanted to make a comment about the Palestinian situation. It was President Carter who really raised the issue in the beginning. During his administration, when he had the peace accord between Egypt and Israel, and throughout his time that he was out of the presidency, he always raised the Palestinian issue. So I think Obama was following what President Carter had started, because he was the first real champion of that whole issue of trying to get a Palestinian state. And well, I think that, yeah. And I think that right now, according to what I see in newspapers, is that the PLO and the Hamas are like the two factions trying to develop a government. And the PLO is the faction that has tried to develop diplomatic relations with other countries in Europe. And they have been able to develop relations with 139 countries. So... And also, they have corporations that are pledging up to $8 billion to redevelop the infrastructure if a Palestinian state were to ever develop. So, I mean, they've made a lot of progress trying to get a Palestinian state now, but the thing is that they don't know whether Hamas or Hezbollah will become terrorists and try to take over the government if a state develops. That's the question, and that's why, you know, if the state were developed with the Palestinians, it would have to be monitored heavily by international people, who could monitor what activity was going on.
Well, but you know, and when you touched on Jimmy Carter and what his goals were. The difference here, I think, is that Jimmy Carter got the two sides together at Camp David. I think it was labeled the Camp David Accord. Got them together and simply let them, you know, work it out. He didn't make suggestions on or suggest that Israel should give up this or that the Palestinians should give up that, he didn't take sides, at least not at that time. What's happening now is Obama is clearly taking a side here. He is proposing to basically cut Israel in half and leaving it undefended. And he's also proposing giving Hamas and the Palestinians over $400 million just this year. And, you know, I think we wouldn't even be having this conversation right now if Obama would just say, hey, I'm going to try to do what Carter did. We're going to try this again. I'm going to bring the two sides together, and then you guys work it out. He seems to always seem to do that with Congress. Well, he doesn't get involved in the health care debate. He wants the Congress to work it out, or any controversial piece of legislation he tries to stay away from. He doesn't want his hands in it. But here, he seems to want to decide what Israel should do, and it's so detrimental to Israel. It's just amazing to me.
Well, I've been to Israel once, and that Dome of the Rock is right in the middle, right outside of the walls of Jerusalem. And I think what it is the Palestinians want that Dome of the Rock. They want to be able to cut Jerusalem in half. They want the eastern part of Jerusalem because they're saying that that Dome of the Rock is one of the holiest sites in Islam. And that's one of the concessions, I think, that has held up the formation of a Palestinian state for so long.
Well, yeah, and that's exactly right. But here's my you know, I'm starting to tie this all together. And when I think about black liberation theology, the friendships between Reverend Wright, Louis Farrakhan, their relationship to Barack Obama. You know, my parents always said that I should be careful who I associate myself with because I'll be judged by my associations. And at the time they were telling me that, of course, I didn't understand what they meant. It wasn't until I became much older that I began to really understand what they meant by that. All right, if Barack Obama is associated with Pastor Jeremiah Wright, who seems to have an issue with Jews, and Louis Farrakhan, we know that he has an issue with Jews. Isn't it conceivable that Barack Obama has a similar issue?
Well, I think that that word, that name Hussein is a Arabic name. So I think Obama sides more with the Arabs than he does with the Jews because he spent so much time in an Islamic country. He was in Indonesia and he was in Pakistan at one time. So he has spent his father was a Muslim from Kenya. And like I had said on one of your other shows, that Zanzibar region, those Kenyans are, like some of them are known as black Arabs, and they had a history of being slave traders. So, I mean, the most ironic thing is that Obama happens to be descended from slave traders, and the black American has the history of slavery, of being in slavery. Mm-hmm. So that's the most ironic thing about Obama's background, but thing is I think he does side with the Arabs because of the Muslim background he has.
But and that is so obvious. But what I would like to know is he thinking that this is going to go over well for him, or does he just simply not care? Is he so arrogant to believe that just because he made the suggestion that we should all go along with it and no one should question it? I mean, even members of his own cabinet implored him not to include that 67 land swap deal in his speech. And at the end, he decided to use it anyway. What's behind that, citizen?
Well, I think that they want to go to the pre-borders from 67 because that's when they had the Six-Day War. And the argument was made that the Jews had, after the Six-Day War, that some of the land in the West Bank, that they basically had taken it by force and that they had become like an expansionist power. And now the argument is that they're settling on land after the Six-Day War that they hadn't paid for and that they had just taken the land. So that's why they want to go That's why he wants to go to the pre-1967 borders, because the pre-1967 borders represent the land that the Jews had paid for after 1948. And so that the land that they bought after 1948, they actually paid for it. But after 67, they expanded the land because the argument was that, you know, they had taken the rest of the land by force.
Yeah. I mean, everything you just said, of course, makes perfect sense. I wonder, though, here's what Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said today. Not only did he reject President Obama's call for Israel to withdraw to 1967 borders, but after a tense meeting, the defiant Israeli leader said he would make some concessions, but stressed that Israel would not go back to the lines from decades earlier. He said peace based on illusions will crash eventually on the rocks of Middle Eastern reality. He warned that there's a deep divide between Israeli and Palestinians that will not be solved by swapping land. They've already tried this, haven't they, citizen?
Yeah, well, the thing, I think that the problem that the Palestinians have now is they see people coming into Israel and settling on land that they believe is their own. And that whole West Bank, that's encroaching upon the Palestinian territory. They believe that's their land. So that, you know, they believe that, you know, Israel is now encroaching on land that was not paid for, that they're just taking by, you know, the fact that, you know, they are, they have the money and they have the people, and they're just going to build on land that, you know, that the founders of Israel did not pay for. So this whole land swap is like, you know, they just want to be able to carve out the borders that they believe are fair, and the compromise would be that they get the eastern part of Jerusalem. That's the only way I would see it.
Okay, let's take a look at what Obama said about Israel over the course of his career. He said on June 4th, 2008, Israel's security is sacrosanct. It is non-negotiable. Any agreement with the Palestinian people must preserve Israel's identity as a Jewish state with secure, recognized, and defensible borders. And Jerusalem will remain the capital of Israel, and it must remain undivided. What has changed? What has changed in this short period of time?
Well, the Palestinians have propaganda to say that the Wailing Wall is not actually part of Solomon's Temple. Their whole thing is that the Wailing Wall is actually the wall of an ancient mosque. And they may claim to the Dome of the Rock, they may claim that that's part of their holy places. And that needs to be part of a Palestinian state. So they want to claim the Wailing Wall as being the wall of a mosque, and they want to claim that the Dome of the Rock is also theirs as well. So therefore, if they do that, then they will be claiming half of Jerusalem.
All right.
Jerusalem is the mm-hmm. most holy city for the Jewish people.
So, but that doesn't explain why Barack Obama has flip-flopped on this issue. He has flip-flopped on the issue, obviously, either or was he just saying what he thought needed to be said in order to get elected?
Well, he's a politician. He's going to say what needs to be said to get elected. But because of his Muslim background, you know, he is going to side more with the Arab people. And I think that's what you're seeing in terms of his agreeing with what the PLO is saying, the way they want the, because the only recognizable governmental body for the Palestinians now that other people recognize is the PLO. And he's following what the PLO is saying, what they want, the boundaries that they want.
All right. He said in September 17, 2008, throughout my career in the state legislature and now in the U.S. Senate, I have been a stalwart friend of Israel on every single issue related to Israel's security. I have been unwavering and will continue to be unwavering. June 4, 2009, America's strong bonds with Israel are well known. This bond is unbreakable. It is based upon cultural and historical ties and the recognition that the aspiration of a Jewish homeland is rooted in a tragic history that cannot be denied. June 9, 2010. I think the relationship between Israel and the U.S. is sufficiently strong that neither of us try to surprise each other. Well, so much for all that talk. So much for all that hope and change, citizen. Barack Obama hasn't delivered. He hasn't brought people together. His rhetoric suggests, his actions suggest that he's all about tearing folks apart, not only here in the United States, but all over the world.
Well, I think because he is trying to appease the Palestinians, you know, President Carter started the process somewhat. He's trying to finish it because he says he wants to see peace in that part of the world. But as we said on your other show the other night, is that if the process went wrong, it could really end up being almost like a Cuban, you know, type of missile crisis where you could get a nuclear standoff. That's the whole danger of it, is that if it goes wrong, you know, it could end up in like a nuclear confrontation in that region of the world. And I don't know what that might lead to. That might lead to World War III, who knows. But I think it's a very dangerous situation. And that's why the Prime Minister of Israel wanted to back out of it, because I think they recognize it's a dangerous situation.
Okay. As I've been reading these quotes from Barack Obama, they become more and more pro the other side than with Israel. For example, November 9, 2010, I'm concerned that we're not seeing each other's side, make the extra effort involved to get a breakthrough that could finally create a framework for a secure Israel living side by side in peace with a sovereign Palestine. The next one, the bombshell. The borders of Israel and Palestine should be based on the 1967 lines with mutually agreed swaps, so that secure and recognized borders are established for both states. I find this to be just a little bit odd. I'm very curious that Barack Obama has taken this tact just ahead of the elections coming up next year. I find it to be extremely strange.
Well, he may be trying to, you know, the Jewish population in America is not going to swing an election. So I think he is trying to set the stage possibly for something else. And it might be that, you know, he is trying to make, like influence the role of the U.S. in that region of the world, because the Arabs definitely are more of a population force than the Jews are, and maybe this is a way to appease like Saudi Arabia or like, you know, one of the other countries that's located in the Middle East.
All right. Barack Obama is the curiosity here is just amazing. You know, his very close friends at the New York Times are now reporting that the president, in wake of the supposed surprise announcement of the new Jewish housing units in Jerusalem, has seized control of the Middle East policy himself. And they go on to note that Mr. Obama, incised by the snub, by that snub, has given Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu a list of demands and relations between the United States and Israel have fallen into a chilly standoff. Now, of course, the New York Times is heavily in the favor of Barack Obama. But incensed by what snub? What list of demands? What chilly standoff? In other words, as we say, folks say in Hollywood, this time it's personal. But should it be personal? How odd. A week or so ago, a friend of mine wrote describing Barack Obama as President Weirdo. And here we have more evidence of some sort of a psychological disturbance, because this response to Israel is not in the realm of the rational. It's highly neurotic. It's somewhere in the unconscious mind of Barack Obama are forces now directed on the Jewish state and its leader. It's not a healthy state of affairs for anybody right now. It reminds me, what he's doing right now reminds me of the day he took office and walked into the White House and saw a bust of Winston Churchill and demanded that the bust be removed. You know, I just happen to think that this guy has some serious problems. And America's just beginning to see how disturbed President Obama really is. Even Jimmy Carter, as liberal as Jimmy Carter is, he would have never done some of these crazy, asinine things. It seems to me that Barack Obama is trying to make an enemy out of everybody that he shouldn't. And he's trying to make a friend out of everybody that he shouldn't. Any thoughts?
Well, I think that he probably is very arrogant, and this is probably an international move that if he thinks he can accomplish, it will, kind of create a legacy for him. But at the same time, I think Israel looks at it that if the Palestinians became terrorists and they had their own state, that they would really try to destroy Israel. And then if Iran got in the middle of it and these other Arab nations that surround Israel, if they got into it, then Israel would be forced to, take drastic action. So I think that he is trying to develop foreign policy for himself and trying to create some type of legacy for himself by taking these extreme measures to try to solve these problems that haven't been solved in years.
Every American president who's tried to broker a peace agreement has collided with that Palestinian stubbornness. And sooner or later, if you recall President Clinton's anguish when his peace proposals were bluntly rejected by the Palestinians in 2000. I mean, and Jimmy Carter. Every American president has failed to broker a peace deal between Palestine and Israel. And I don't blame President Obama for trying. He may as well try his hand. What has he got to lose? Every other president has failed. So, I mean, he could just add himself to the list. It's a distinguished list. But to suggest that Israel make itself vulnerable to attack, to basically cut Israel in half in favor of the Palestinians, and then provide the Palestinians and Hamas with much-needed American funds, when we don't have those funds to give, it seems to be not only self-destructive for his presidency, but the whole world. As I stated earlier in this broadcast, and earlier and yesterday and the day before, Israel, if Israel is attacked, they will have no choice but to respond. And in so doing, could conceivably touch off World War III. Is Obama's neurosis over Israel, is his distaste for Israel, such to the extent that he would risk World War III?
Well, I think that he's making a calculated move to undo, he's making a calculated move to try to undo the pain of the Six-Day War that was caused between the Arabs and the Israelis.
Why? Why would he want to do that? Why does he think he needs to do that?
Because during the Six-Day War, the Israelis were able to defeat the forces of Egypt, Jordan, and Syria in a matter of 6 days. And it was kind of like it kind of embarrassed those nations that they were defeated that quickly. And the way they did it is they had a large-scale surprise airstrike by Israel on Egypt. And as a result, Israel was able to take control of the Gaza Strip and, like, also the Sinai part of Egypt as well, and the West Bank and the eastern part of Jerusalem. And, like, and they also took the Golan Heights from Syria. But they gave back to Sinai, they gave that back to Egypt, and they gave back parts of the West Bank back to Jordan, and they gave back parts of the Golan Heights to Syria, but the argument is that they didn't give back enough of the West Bank. And that the part of the West Bank that's being settled on now is territory that they took during the Six-Day War. And many people see the Six-Day War as like an act of aggression on the part of Israel, and that it was more of a defensive type of attack, and that was the nature of the attack.
Yeah,
and after the attack occurred, they see Israel as becoming more of like an expansionist type of power.
Well, here's what I think. I think that not only America is on the verge of a civil war within our own borders. Barack Obama has fostered an air of divisiveness, if you prefer, in America, where instead of bringing us all together, instead of there are no red states, there are no blue states on the United States of America, he has divided this country greatly. And he hasn't, that he's not satisfied with that. Now he seeks to divide the world. And I cannot help but conclude that Bible prophecy is being fulfilled, and that Israel will survive, but it's going to survive at great cost to Israel and the rest of the world, including the United States of America. We're in a lot of trouble, folks. This is not going to go down easy. And just because Netanyahu and Obama met today, and they smiled for the most part, and they had nice things to say about each other, this is not going to go down good. But Obama is the first president of the United States to ever ever do something this bizarre. Bible prophecy is being fulfilled, folks. I can't overstress it. You know, I don't know how many of the people who are listening to the sound of my voice are Christians or who believe in Bible prophecy, in Revelation, the end times. But it just seems to me, if you're not, you will be. I mean, logic is telling us right now that we're living in the last days. Things are spiraling out of control. Out of control. Here in the United States and everywhere else. Now, of course, we have the illusion of control. We don't really have much control over much of anything. But with the election of this president, he hasn't bothered to lead. He hasn't bothered to take the reins and help pull America together like Ronald Reagan did in such tough times. He has divided this nation and is seeking to divide the whole world. We're in a mess, and I can't see how we're going to get out of it. You have any parting thoughts, citizen, before we wrap things up?
Well, I think if we see an attack on Israel, I think it would be a sign of, we're in drastic days. We're in, times spoken of in the Bible.
Yeah, I think so, too. And I think it's very unfortunate. We're living in the last days. The time is almost up. You know, I heard a Republican politician say that, hey, don't worry so much. Everything's going to be all right. We had Jimmy Carter, and we survived Carter. And what did we get as a result of Carter? We got Ronald Reagan. That's uplifting. It was an uplifting statement. But we don't have another Ronald Reagan on the horizon. I don't see one. And I can't imagine another 4 years of Barack Hussein Obama. I don't think this nation is going to survive it, and I certainly don't believe that the world governments will survive. So, hey, I really do appreciate the call, citizen. You've helped a great deal, and your insights are just terrific. You're a very smart man. I really do appreciate you calling in, and you helped pass the time real fast. So thank you so much, and I'll see you on Monday and perhaps on some of the later shows tonight. Hey, tune in to Cool Mike and GGT tonight and Conservative TNT if he's on tonight. I'll see y'all in some of the other chat rooms later on tonight. Thank you for coming in. Thank you for stopping in. Thank you for listening. It's been great. I hope everybody has a great weekend. And we will talk again. Thank you so much for being here.
For itself, the precious gift of liberty, the sacred heritage of freedom.
With a deep awareness of the responsibility conferred by your trust, I accept your nomination for the presidency of the United States.
You ain't seen nothing yet.
I'm willing if you are.
We, as Americans, have the capacity now, as we've had in the past, to do whatever needs to be done to preserve this last and greatest bastion of freedom.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I've spoken of a shining city all my political life, but I don't know if I ever quite communicated what I saw when I said it. But in my mind, it was a tall, proud city built on rocks stronger than oceans, windswept, God-blessed, and teeming with people of all kinds living in harmony and peace.
accept your nomination for president.
I, George Herbert Walker Bush, do solemnly swear. Communism died this year. By the grace of God, America won the Cold War. As Commander-in-Chief, I can report to you our armed forces fought with honor and valor.
Citizens, I proudly accept your nomination.
I've got a vision for America that is hopeful and optimistic and inclusive.
And tonight, my fellow Americans, I ask you to stand with me.
I, George Walker Bush, do solemnly swear.
I believe in the energy and innovative spirit, so we unleash that energy with the largest tax relief in a generation.
Freedom and fear are at war. Our nation, this generation, will lift a dark threat of violence from our people and our future. We will not tire, we will not falter, and we will not fail.
And the people who knock these buildings down will hear all of us soon. America in this young century proclaims liberty throughout all the world and to all the inhabitants thereof. Renewed in our strength, tested but not weary, we are ready for the greatest achievements in the history of freedom.